Podtacular episode 335, Halo 4 spoiler cast for December 10th, 2012. Welcome back to Podtacular, the unofficial Halo Universe podcast. I'm your host, Duststorm, and we are going to be talking some Halo 4 spoilers in this episode. So if you have not finished the campaign yet, first of all, why haven't you done it? Go finish the campaign. And second of all, if you haven't finished the campaign and you don't want anything to be spoiled, you probably want to turn your ears away now because we're going to be talking some very, very heavy fiction that's in and around the Halo 4 campaign. So you have been forewarned. From here on out, if you are wanting to listen to spoilers or if you want to hear the deep discussion, then continue listening. If not, stop until you finish the campaign. On that note, I have three guests with me tonight to kind of help go through some of the deeper details in the campaign. And they are Brian Newman. Welcome back.
Hey.
How's it going?
It's going really good.
Very nice.
How are you doing?
I am doing well on a good Sunday night to talk about some Halo 4. We have Goose Checka from Griffball Hub.
Hello.
Hello. Welcome back to the show. How's the land of Griffball going in Halo 4?
It's very hammer heavy at the moment. Very busy.
Very, very nice. And then we have Green Skull from Ready Up Live.
What's up?
What's up? How is the YouTube end going for you guys?
Oh, you know, it's going. It's going.
It's going?
YouTube.
Let's go. So a quick question for our listeners who managed to listen to our show when we had you guys on talking about your music single. How well did that end up doing?
Really, really good, actually. We recently got word that we had over 200 sales, which is pretty legit. We don't know the time frame of that, so we don't know if that's within a couple of weeks, or like we don't really, it's not very clear, so I don't know. We'll see it again in a few weeks. See what the new numbers are at. But yeah, it's very successful.
Very good. How many views on YouTube does it have, do you know?
200, over 200,000.
That's not bad.
Yeah, it's doing pretty good.
I'm still surprised it's not in the millions, dude. I mean, it's a fantastic song.
So I was going to ask, on a scale of like 1 to the Beatles, where do you think you guys fall?
Ooh.
Probably the Beatles. we got 224,000. So it's still climbing.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, you guys did a really good job with it, I think. So,
thank you.
If you guys have not heard it, make sure you go over to Ready Up Live's YouTube channel and check it out, because it is an awesome, awesome song, and they did a very good job putting the video together as well. So do it. Do it now.
That was my ringtone for like 2 weeks.
Only 2 weeks?
There was a situation where I was told to change it.
Aw, that's too bad.
It doesn't matter. It's an annoying story. But I was told, yeah, change it. That's annoying. Change it. It kept on going. There was somebody who is not a big fan of Halo that I work with, and he was just like, change it, change it, change it. I can't stand it. I was like, all right. I was like, okay, all right. Fair enough. I've made him change ringtones before, too, so it's okay.
Okay, fair enough.
It's an accepted deal between us that it's like we don't do ringtones that...
So it's a mutual thing.
It's a mutual understanding. As long as he never, ever, ever has a rap ringtone again, I will not play a Halo ringtone again. It'll be fine.
Alrighty. Which is funny because that one's kind of a rap ringtone too.
That doesn't count though. That's a good kind.
It's a good kind of rap.
That's a good kind of rap. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Oh boy. Okay. So time to get down into the nitty gritty of the Halo 4 campaign. So the campaign picks off roughly 5 years after the events of Halo 3, when you activate the what was attempted to be the reconstruction of Installation 04, and kind of blow up the Ark in the process. Or
I'm not really certain how blown up that thing is, because Cortana only said that it was hurt, that a number had been done on it. She didn't say what kind of number. So I think that it's, I mean, after all, the Ark's a pretty big thing. I don't think that just Halo firing or blowing up in orbit above it would have really killed it.
True. Fair enough.
So, not really
well,
sure.
I mean, an interesting thing, too, is I just finished reading Primordium, and there's actually, I didn't know this, but there's two Arks.
Yeah, there is.
Out there. So there's some other Ark that's floating around out there. And
like, there's a bigger Ark. That's the scary thing.
Yeah, like, that was the smaller one. of the two Arks.
Yeah.
So, scary, interesting stuff. Hopefully it will be at least discussed later throughout the games. Maybe we might just see it in the books. I don't know how much into detail we'll get into the games with that, but definitely something interesting to keep in mind as we're walking through all this. But starting off with the game, the first scenes that we get is with Dr. Halsing getting interrogated by some Oni spook, and we have no idea who he is. He remains dark throughout the entire cutscene. And he's pretty much probing Halsey about what she's done with the Spartans. Ha ha, yes, very funny, Dan.
God, is that what the kids are calling it nowadays? By the way, I'm like less than a year older than him, so it's not called the kids.
So Halsey's being bombarded with questions from this Oni guy, kind of, and he's really putting her to the test of what her motives were behind creating the Spartans, and she's kind of refuting it with, well, look at what the Spartans have done when the Covenant came and attacked. And eventually the Oni person makes this kind of personal and mentions John. And at that point, Dr. Halsey's like, what are you really going after here? So I'm not sure how long before Halo 4 this takes place. I'm guessing it's shortly after the events of Halo, because I remember from reading the books that she escaped with it was Kelly, right?
Yeah,
with the Spartans.
Yeah, so she escaped with Kelly to go off and hide somewhere. So I guess between then and Halo 4, they found out where Dr. Halsey was, and they put her away for a while.
Okay, you haven't read Glasslands yet, have you?
I have not.
Okay, yeah, that's all in Glasslands.
Oh, it is? Okay.
Yeah.
So, enlighten us a little bit then.
Okay, so you mentioned that Halsey and Kelly took off in book three. Well, they show up in book four on Onyx with Kurt and Fred and a handful of other Spartans. And if you remember at the end of book four, they were trapped in the Dyson Sphere. Well, Glasslands is kind of all about how they get out. And they end up getting out roughly several months. For them, it's only a couple days, but there's like a weird like little time distortion effect where it's several months later.
Slipspace will do that to you.
yeah, there's some weird time story stuff with it. But Kelly and Linda and Fred and handful of Spartan 3s and Mendez and all that, they get out of the Dyson Sphere right around... I'm not exactly certain at the time, like 100% where the timeline falls, but right around the time of the war memorial at Voy, at the end of Halo 3.
Okay.
Because if you remember, all the events of Ghost of Onyx kind of took place during like Halo 2, sort of.
Right.
So they get out sometime around like right at the very end of Halo 3.
Well, isn't it also they make her go to the memorial to show her that, Halsey, you're dead, no one's going to come looking for you?
Yeah, I don't remember if they actually have her there or not. Like, I know the other Spartans were. A buddy of mine made a joke like, okay, so we're just going to frame the entire scene so that you can't see anybody else, just Lord Hood. And it's like, oh, yeah, all the other Spartans, they're just off camera. They're just off screen. But I don't remember if she was actually there or not. I think Perengoski made a crack at her about it, saying that her name was on the memorial. I don't really remember if she was there or
yeah,
not.
Yeah, it was something to do with the memorial, but basically it was conveyed either through a picture of the memorial itself, or like a death certificate, something like that, that Halsey, for all intents and purposes, is dead. No one's looking for her now.
Yeah.
And now she's back on Infinity.
Yeah, which is pretty cool. And by the way, yeah, like I guess this is definitely getting into story spoiler stuff. If you haven't beaten Halo 4 yet, you're a terrible person. Go beat Halo 4.
Hey, now, I don't think you're I'll play the good cop here. You're a good guy. You're a girl. You're just great.
No, no, they're not. Sorry.
Dan, are you trying to ask this person out? What are you doing?
How attractive are they?
I don't know. I don't know. Because only the most beautiful of us have beaten Halo 4 already, so they're probably pretty. If they haven't beaten Halo 4, they're A, ugly, and B, terrible people. That's a fact.
All right. Let's get back to Halsey here before we go wander off anymore. So she's been put away for about 5 years, and about the same amount of time that Chief's been drifting in outer space.
Well, she spent most of that time working. Parangoski has put her to work installing the engines on Infinity and doing some other stuff. So
she's still doing stuff, but she's tightly under wraps.
Yeah, she's on a really short leash. Yeah.
All right. So that's kind of interesting that you see Dr. Halsey, who built Infinity, is coming back to Infinity to kind of help solve whatever's going on in Requiem. She's probably one of the foremost experts on Forerunner tech at this point, too.
Yeah, that's probably why she's there.
Yeah, she's the only one who knows how to do it.
Yeah, I mean, that was pretty clear on Glasslands when it came to deciphering the Forerunner technology. She was the only one who was able to do anything. And that's why Parangoski doesn't just lock her away or kill her, because that's a lot of what people want is to you know, sentence her to death. But her brain's too valuable to the war effort.
Yeah. So this is a wild, drawn conclusion at this point. But looking from the Greg Bear novels on and seeing how Goss gets really implemented in some of these characters, do you think it might be a possibility that the Librarian is somehow in Dr. Halsey? Because, I mean, with how much she knows about Forerunner tech, it wouldn't surprise me if there's some little bit that was kind of planted there years ago.
I don't know. Like, first of all, I'd like 343 to come out and tell us how to pronounce the damn word. Like, I don't know.
I think it's Goss or Gays something.
I don't know. I mean, it's a possibility. I don't want to rule anything out. I kind of hope that they don't do that. Librarian heavily implied that she had a lot to do with, she flat out said she had a lot to do with how Cortana was created. So, and Master Chief's physical abilities, his armor, blah, 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 blah. So, yeah, I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if she did something. I don't want to say she's necessarily a part of Halsey. That seems almost a little bit too predictable, so I'm hoping they'll do something else, but yeah. It could happen.
All right. Already needlessly complicated. It doesn't need to get even more needlessly complicated.
Fair enough.
Yeah, a little bit.
I mean, but you've seen some instances where it's we've seen cases in the Halo lore that's been like that so far.
Well, I mean, if you look at Halo lore, the story changes every single game. Game 1, humans are Forerunner. Games 2 and 3, the Forerunners kill themselves to save humans. And then 4, or Greg Bear, if you believe that bull, humans grew up alongside Forerunners, but then got too cocky and got devolved. So there's different stories going on. There's no way to predict anything, so I've just given up.
I like that part, though.
Isn't the devolved the one that's like totally going on now? Because considering
that is the canon one.
Yeah, that's unfortunate. Did you go from science fantasy?
I mean, I almost look at it as, because I mean, it's just learning bits and pieces at a time, and once you learn one bit, it changes your perspective on how one thing is. But then when you get more detail, more clarity, it constantly changes. It's like a hypothesis that changes when you're doing a scientific study.
I don't think it's really a clarification, though. It's more of, we're taking you in a dramatically different direction. We're going through a different door. Because if you play Halo 1, 2, and 3, there is not one inkling. There's no way at all that you can believe that Bungie had this super race of people ever in mind, ever actually coming into play. Like the entire terminals in Halo 3 with the Didact and Librarian, they were goodbye letters. Like, it was very clear that this is it. They existed and that's it, and that's all you're ever going to know about them. And then magically, they're all back.
Well, I don't know if the Librarian's back.
Well, I mean, Guilty Spark kind of flat out says she is.
Well, so, I mean, Guilty Spark is also rampant.
Oh, please, tell me we're going towards Cortana. Yeah. Please, I've been waiting.
Well, we'll get to Cortana's rampancy here in a little bit.
You know what? I really don't get into these feminist arguments, so I need Goose. I'm glad you're here. So, is there any like inherent sexism based on the fact that Cortana is an incompetent driver? She's like, she, please get into that.
Well, nothing wrong with being feminist, and just because you're feminist doesn't mean you're going to argue.
No, not at all. I wasn't saying that. I'm just saying that I'm not, because, like, I'm a guy, and I don't, like, mainly I don't care.
You should have listened to the, you should have listened to the Hubcast 2 episodes ago.
Oh, you should have listened to the Modcast last episode.
When I haven't listened to it yet.
Well, you won't need to, because you're probably going to get a heavy dose of it here. No, there's actually, unfortunately, a lot of latent sexism in Halo 4, which is really disappointing considering how many women actually worked on that game. It is a little upsetting, but I'm trying to have faith. I'm trying to, you know, stay strong here. But yeah. But if we don't want to go into Cortana yet, I'll hold back. I'll put down the soapbox for a while.
we'll get there soon, because I know you have to leave.
Yeah. And you'll probably be grateful. But that's okay.
No, as long as it's a good discussion, there's no reason for it not to be ungrateful about it. But just wrapping up this section with the Oni investigator, he gets really specific and starts talking about Chief, and Halsey then starts to raise eyebrows, like, what are you really after? And he basically tries to flat out tell Halsey that he's dead, he's gone, there's no more original Spartans left. And at this point, we know that Oni's already been working on their own batch of Spartans. But she comes and outright tells the Oni guy that, don't you underestimate these Spartans, because they're our next step into basically as a species. So I wonder if we're going to see that more in Spartan Ops, or maybe that's something that'll get readdressed in throughout the games, because from what we've seen in Spartan Ops so far, the only reference back to that is just Halsey's back on Infinity.
I mean, it really struck me when Chief got the armor upgrade from the librarian, you know, because she talked, it was like hearing Halsey again about, you know, the next step in evolution, and I've got to speed up your evolution.
So what exactly happened there? Because I mean, you don't see anything that changes in the game other than the fact that you don't get
murdered by the Didact.
Well, yeah, it wasn't an armor upgrade. And this is, you know, I loved Halo 4's story. It's probably my second favorite Halo. I really liked it, but that is the damn dumbest thing. I hope they come up with something a little bit better than that. But essentially what it is Librarian, in her infinite wisdom, knew that somehow Didact was going to come back into having the Composer again. And she implanted into humanity a latent gene within our gene pool that makes us immune to composition. But here's where it gets really, really, really stupid, is that she has to manually unlock it. Why? Why not just make it work?
The way I understood it is that humans just haven't reached that point in their evolution yet. Like, eventually they would evolve to a point where it would unlock, but apparently the Didact was awoken too early and humans aren't where they need to be. That's a really weak explanation, but I guess that's kind of how I justify it.
No,
that seems right.
That's what I got into, too. Humans were just not prepared, so I'm on the same line as you there.
Yeah, I agree.
I mean, well, in that case, I mean, she seemed to have planned this out pretty well. I mean, based on the way that humans evolved, that would have been a long ass time for any more evolution to happen. I mean, we did. If that's the case, then we were way early in the ball game. It's like, wow, okay, humanity. What have you? You know, I mean, apparently we jumped on the gun in there. So it is interesting. But I found it to be like that was the weakest part of the story. I thought was just that silly little. I have to unlock your composition immunity. Hang on a second here. Let me get out this booster shot real quick. And okay, you're done.
So yeah. Is that pretty much the only thing? Because there's no physical traits that get altered. I don't think there's anything to the armor that she
happened to the armor. Nothing happened to the armor. I don't know why they needed to do that, like that little armor flare when you know that Iron Man ground pound he did and it made it look like he did something awesome. Yeah, that was just her just tweaking his jeans.
Yeah, they were snug. Had to loosen them up a bit.
Yeah, a little bit, dude. I mean, you gain some weight when you're in cryo, you know?
Yeah. I mean, that's the whole reason why everybody else melted and he didn't when the Composer got activated on that space station out in the middle of nowhere. And that was it. That entire sequence existed just so we could watch everybody else die and Chief live.
That entire sequence happened because somebody watched Indiana Jones the night before and was like, oh, dude, we're doing that. Face melt.
I honestly love loved that. I was like, oh, crap.
That was cool. Like, that was, yeah, yeah, no, 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 no. It was cool. But I've seen that. I think I've seen that somewhere else.
And, yeah, and it was very Indiana Jones. Just the skull melt. I'm like, it looks cool, but yeah, it was extremely Indiana Jones.
I feel so bad for all the scientists because they really get just screwed over in the campaign. They get screwed over in Spartan Ops. I mean, they're just merciless in Spartan Ops, calling them eggheads. That's just unkind.
Yeah, it's
if there's anything to learn from all this, it's to not be smart, to just win with brute force, and you're not going to die.
That's quickly. Way.
Actually, you know what? You will love this. At the science department in my college, one of the professors is a big Halo fan, and he changed science department on his door to egghead department, which I thought
was
great. Was absolutely great. And of course, how many people know, like, go that deep into the story that they're willing to pick up on that? And I walked past the door and I walked in and I was like, is this a Halo joke? And he goes, yeah, buddy. Yes.
That's excellent.
Yes.
You're like giving high fives behind closed doors.
Yeah, it's pretty cool.
It's like, you rock.
Yeah.
Seriously, respect the science, people. Jesus.
yeah, science is awesome. But yeah, I think the use of eggheads in Spartan Ops is really starting to get just overused.
Not at all. I love it. I want her to say it more. Go.
Well, and the other thing is, Sarah Palmer, I mean, she's running Ops for Oni pretty much. She's closely tied with them. And I mean, yeah, I guess I know she's a Spartan, but she's kind of in along there with them, being associated with Oni. She's kind of an egghead of herself.
You know what? I'm interested. What other people think about her? People on HBO don't seem to like her. I like Palmer. I think, you know, she's funny.
In my opinion, there hasn't been enough real character development for her. We see her, like, the only thing that we've seen so far is just her and Lasky. There might be something there. There might be some interest there, but other than that, she's a shallow character.
I don't know. Yeah. I really enjoy her in Spartan Ops. I have a blast listening to her to talk down. It was at Miller. Just shut up, Miller. Like, that's what she just really.
Come on, Jared.
And I really appreciate that. You know, I like the fact that the person calling the shots is a woman. It's nice for a change. And that, you know, she is able to. I mean, she reminds me of what a hard ass Marine would be like. Like, when I imagine that I'm boots on the ground going into an infantry or a hostile situation, that's exactly what I would expect to have in my ear, is someone just dead on, no nonsense, just, you know, kicking all the way.
Yeah, I agree. I don't like how she's like that. Like, she's definitely, like, it's very soldier, right? It really hits you over the head with that. But I do agree that at the times it seems like too much. You know, it's where she's called them like an egghead like four times in a row or whatever. I'm like, well, that was kind of pushing it. Like,
yeah. But even aside from that, I do appreciate the kind of militaristic viewpoint of her being the commander of all the Spartans. That I'm perfectly okay with that. But I just want to see more of kind of what makes her tick, like. Give us a little bit more of who Sarah Palmer is, because as far as being the Spartan commander and being the lead of all the fire teams, we really don't know much about her.
What makes her tick are annoying Forerunner devices that need to be kicked. That's what makes her tick. And that was one of the coolest sequences I think I've ever seen. It was like, okay, that's great. She just kicked a Forerunner box. She's like, bam, I'm kicking it. Had enough of this thing's crap. Boom.
Yeah, I thought that was really symbolic, that she's just taking matters into her own hands and fixing things on her own.
All I gotta say is, there's a good female character that I like. Let's not explore her anymore, because when that happens, the female characters begin to suck. So let's just leave it where it is, so it's okay, and we can all enjoy it together.
But give us something.
We have something. She's badass. What more do you need?
Something a little bit more than that.
Like, what?
I mean, we know Chief is badass, but we know a little bit of his backstory.
His emotion. Well,
I mean, we've seen a little bit out of her, too. You know, she's kind of, she's no-nonsense kind of person, but at the same time, she's willing to do some ballsy stuff. You know, that thing where she kicks the Forerunner machine, where she tackles Lasky out of the way. That little quip she makes about Master Chief being too short. I like her. She's cool.
Yep, two thumbs up here. I enjoy. Yep.
Yeah, she's very archetypal to me. To be honest, though, like, I see where this is coming from here. That it's like,
you're very archetypal.
I like what, sure. I love her. Like, I agree that, like, she's a cool character, and I like the fact that she's almost female Master Chief-esque in the sense that, it, almost in terms of badassery, right? It's just like, you don't mess with her, right? Like, she just gets it done. But, I don't know, I want to see more, right? I want to see the layers of her.
Yeah, and I mean, to your point, Goose, yeah, I see where in other franchises and games, if you explore too much into a character, sometimes it turns out to really just run amok. But I think we need at least a little bit of something. And maybe we'll see that in some of the future Spartan Ops episodes. Maybe we won't.
I guess we got a while to wait then.
Yeah, we got 6 weeks.
January 21st.
6 weeks.
Hey, at least we got a map pack coming out tomorrow.
Woo! Indeed we do.
Now, what all is in it? I haven't... I've heard about it, but I haven't really looked into
three
it.
Three maps. Shattered, Harvest, and Wreckage.
Harvest, which looks pretty unique, and the other two look exactly the same. I don't know what's going on with those maps.
Okay. Well, good stuff. Good to know. Three new maps.
Nonetheless, new maps. I'm just excited for that in general.
Yep, new maps are always good.
Wreckage is a little reminiscent of Waterworks to me. At least some aspects of it are.
Hmm.
I don't know. One of them looks like a Tiberium mine. I saw like these big green crystals. I don't know if you play Shattered Conquer or not.
Do you guys Shattered. Think these are going to be environments that we're going to see in Spartan Ops?
Funny thing, because we were just talking about that on our previous episode. I'm guessing we're going to see maybe even all three of these in Spartan Ops.
Excellent. Because I've got to say, one bone to pick with Spartan Ops that I have is that I'm really tired of going to the same places over and over and over again.
Well, so, I thought they actually did a pretty good job with varying the scenarios.
Well, I mean, the scenarios were different, but there was one time we loaded up, I think it was episode 4 last night, and I looked at it and I'm like, and I told Cal, I think we already did this. I remember being here. He's like, no, that was like episode 2 or whatever. And I was like, oh, well, it looks exactly the same. Well, the architecture is the same. The environment's the same. Everything is the same. It's just the button's even in the same place.
These Marines are really bad at holding locations, I've noticed. They lose them a lot. It's like, guys, we just sent Crimson to take care of this like a week ago. Let's go. Come on, guys, step it up. This can't be that tough.
Because yeah, they're not Spartans. They're Marines.
Marines, you guys had one job. That was to hold this place. You haven't done that. That was to hold Valhalla. Quit losing it. But I, you know what? I'm not really that concerned about like the diversity of the Spartan Ops things, because that's got to be really, really expensive to come up with all those different areas.
Yeah.
I do not think that we will be seeing Harvest as a map there, because Harvest is Harvest. That's not Requiem. So.
Oh, that's a good point. That's a good point.
Yeah. So I don't think we're going to end up seeing those. That would be kind of off. And really, I'm kind of disappointed with what they did with Harvest. I'm like, why does Harvest look like that? Harvest is supposed to be a big glass ball right now. So that's interesting, but I mean, we'll see. My feelings will probably change once I actually see it and play it. And, you know.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, we saw at the end of Reach where they were rebuilt, building on Reach.
Yeah, that was like 30 years later. This is 5 years later. Well, I mean, I guess it's 30 years after the destruction of Harvest, but have they been rebuilding that entire time? I mean, probably not. You know, I mean, this is 5 years after the end of the war.
Or it could be like they could have taken it from like pictures or scans from before Harvest got glassed.
That's a good call. That's a good one right there. Okay, fair enough. I can see that for multiplayer for sure, because that's war games and the computers and such. But definitely Spartan Ops, though, I do not expect to see it, because I mean, again, Harvest is Harvest, Requiem is Requiem.
Yeah, that's a good point. Thanks for catching me on that one.
Accept all credit. Yes.
Another interesting thing that I found, at least it put me off a little bit when I ran through it and really listened to the dialogue in Halo, was when you put Cortana into the system in the Composer when you're trying to catch the Didact, he says that Chief has been hiding this advanced Ancilla. So Cortana is a more advanced AI than what he's experienced before?
Well, you know what?
Or is this something that the librarian managed to do to Cortana that made her more advanced? Or I'm assuming this is more before the fact. But
I can throw out a hypothesis for it here. If you look at the Covenant, we've actually never really seen like a full blown Covenant AI, because they were apparently, the way the story rolls out, the Covenant were really bad with computers, right? And they, you know, any AIs they had were actually copies off of us. Well, any Covenant technology is all repurposed Forerunner technology. And it could very well be that, you know what, maybe Forerunner AIs just were not that ship shape at the time. We will see. I don't think that that would be the case, but, who knows?
Because, like, 343 Guilty Spark is technically a Forerunner AI.
Yeah, exactly. And he was not that brilliant. Cortana was smarter than he was.
Well, I know, but he had the intelligence to become self-aware. That's a pretty big
thing. He was already a person, though. Because remember, Guilty Spark is the result of composition. So there is something different with that, perhaps. But in every situation, though, between Guilty Spark and Cortana, Cortana was always outsmarting him every step of the way. It seems like the key feature that Forerunner AIs have over human AIs is that they can live forever, or at least for an incredibly, you know, for 100,000 years. Because hell, I mean, the Halo 3 terminals, those were little scraps of Mennekin bias still alive, even 100,000 years later. So, I mean, clearly they have that over them. I'm very interested to see a description for, you know, an explanation really for what they mean by advanced Ancilla. You're absolutely right. Because one of the things about Mennekin bias, when Didek first made him, he was a contender class AI, whatever that means. So from one to contender, you know, where does Cortana fall? And Mennekin bias was the big deal. You know, this is the best AI we've ever made. Well, if Mennekin bias was the best AI they ever made, then what's he shouting out about Cortana being so advanced for? So we'll see.
Do you think it could be because Cortana was flash cloned from a human brain as opposed to just being composed?
That's how I
Well, every AI is from a human brain.
That's not how I read it. First things, you really weren't supposed to do it because of the huge psychological risks and neurological risks to both the person being flash cloned and
Only advanced AIs, or what they called it, or what did Cortana call it?
Smart AI.
The very first level where she explains when you're in the Warthog run, she's like, well, there might be a chance because as far as I know, I'm the only one that's been like straight from a human's brain.
Yeah.
Because I've got an explanation for you there, though, is she's the only one from a living human's brain. Dr. Halsey's brain was cloned. Apparently, I forget which book it was described in, but they did 20 different clones of Halsey's brain, and only one of those brains survived. The way they get brains normally is they are from deceased individuals, and that's how they do it.
So maybe it's because it's a living brain?
Yeah, like, it could very well be.
Cortana said the only one made from living tissue.
Mm-hmm. Okay, well, there could have been a discrepancy in the script there, or just very well, I mean, it could just change things up. But so far, I would say Cortana's the only one who's come from a living brain, because Halsey mentions that it was probably in the first book, that they had never tried that before. But every previous AI, though, comes from a dead body, a dead person.
Okay.
There's a very specific example in Glasslands or Thursday War, whichever, probably Glasslands, where BB says to Phillips, he makes a joke about him. He's like, hey, whenever you die, would you mind donating your brain to the science program, the AI program or whatever it was? You could be useful. We could turn you into another AI. It was some kind of joke that he made. But the human brains are what they use to make AIs. I guess Cortana's the first one to come from a living brain.
Yeah, well, I mean, that would make sense. And I think it does play up to that trope that humans are inherently special, you know, that we are the greatest potential in the universe. So obviously, if you're cloning from a live human, there's really nothing greater in the universe than that, maybe?
Could be. Could very well be.
We're special. We write up.
We must have been devolved for a very good reason then.
Oh, God, don't say that. Yeah. I can't even take that.
No, I like the devolved storyline. I like that.
It's interesting.
I can't see humans being that special. I mean, I was just driving around Cincinnati yesterday, and frankly, there's nothing.
That town. Remember, this is science fiction.
You're talking about Greg Bear. You're talking about science fantasy. Don't you mix fiction with fantasy. Don't you
Uh-oh.
Do that.
Oh. Uh-oh. Ooh.
One is reality, and one has magic fairies. So.
I don't know. I do like Greg Bear stuff.
I don't know. I would consider it science fiction.
Yeah, I mean, it's... I don't know. I mean, it's a good mix because, I mean, like, if you said to somebody, like, hey, what do you call Star Wars? Is that science fiction or is that fantasy? Well, it's like 60% science fiction, 40% fantasy, you know? And Halo is kind of getting into that same little bit there.
Hang on, though, but I think something to consider is that at some point in literally, like, every timeline of a science fiction story, technology will increase to a point where it essentially is fantasy. In any story that's science fiction, you know what I mean? Like, if you say, hey, put us 5,000 plus years in the future, it's just going to be preposterous stuff that we wouldn't even consider science fiction anyway.
Well, it's almost like the difference between fiction, science fiction and fantasy is done with magical stuff that is not explained by physical means, where science fiction is like, there's a technological reason why this thing can happen a certain way.
Which is exactly why Star Wars is science fiction, because the only possibly magic thing there is the Force, and it's actually explained in a biophysical mechanical way.
Right. But, I mean, the same thing could be said about the Greg Bear stuff.
I was just about to counter with...
I have a really, really hard time with that, mostly because it goes against every law of nature. Things evolve and move forward according to Occam's razor. The simplest explanation is the most likely. You take the path of least resistance. So for a story to advance to a point and then to double back on itself, it's just needlessly complicated. There's no point in that happening at all. And the story they had in Halo 1, 2, and 3 was worlds better than this. You know, that the Forerunners were destroyed by their own hubris. They played God and they paid for it. That's a real story, not, oh, look, we're going to totally change. And it's based in reality, too, because that totally could have happened. It totally could have happened in our reality. But this whole adding in the devolution of humans and the visiting and all that kind of stuff.
Okay, I see.
The line, it takes it out of believability. I can believe in aliens. I can believe in religious zealots. I can believe that humanity has flung across the universe and has to defend itself. I can believe in warp drive and all the other things within this universe. But the second you add in something like the evolution of a species and something like the composer, and it's just so much. It just stretches the rubber band too far.
I see what you're getting at.
Well, at the same time, though, if they didn't do that stuff, then okay, where's the story? You know, it's like, we can't do any more. I mean, we got to create these. We got to do something with Forerunners, right? I mean, just to make Forerunners human, I always thought that was pretty lame, to be honest.
I love that they were a mystery. I love that we kind of knew, but we didn't really know, and you could really kind of just guess. You know, the terminals were like a glimpse into their lives, and that's all you knew. That left you wondering. I liked that.
Well, they were a mystery for 11 years was the deal. And it's like, it's at some point you got to get some answers. Yeah. And I mean,
Halo 4. It's going to happen at some point, right?
But yeah, I mean,
we don't know the mystery of the Sphinx. We don't know how they built the pyramids. And that's exactly why they're still interesting. That's exactly why we continue.
That drive you nuts?
I think it's fascinating. I think if I knew the mystery of the Sphinx, I probably wouldn't give a shit about it anymore. It would cease to be impressive. It would cease to be engaging. And that's what this has kind of done for me, at least, is that the mystery's gone. You know, now we're in this magical world where Cortana can magically use hard light, which she's never done before.
Yeah, that's a big topic.
You know, this, oh, look, Master Chief's on top of a nuke, but suddenly he's okay. You know, it's taken it just too far to the point where, okay, I can't even pretend that this is real. You know, I can't even pretend that this is happening anywhere within my universe. This must be some parallel universe where other stuff is happening, because this is just beyond the realm of anything that I could possibly entertain as being anywhere plausible.
Well, I mean, then in my opinion, Star Wars would be science fantasy as well.
But no, there's a biochemical reason. It's the evolution of the
human. Yeah, but I don't see that how a long time ago in a galaxy far, far away that for Star Wars.
The difference here too, to be honest.
Well, I mean this isn't a Star Wars podcast. I don't want to get too far into it. That's just George Lucas pulling something out of his okay, look, Star Wars 7 has very little George Lucas. Okay, our lives can continue, we'll be fine.
Not from what I've heard.
He is in a advisory role. Advisory means okay.
Yeah, but how much of an advisor? I mean,
if Disney's smart, then they'll say, "Shut up, George Lucas. We're doing something smart for once."
Since we're getting hung up, this is the difference. In Star Wars, you take the Force on faith. That is the one grain that you kind of accept if you're going to be part of that reality. Everything else can be, you can kind of justify. That is the one piece that you take on faith. And that's okay. There can be one thing that is weird or out of the normal, but it's part of that universe and you kind of accept it. In Halo, the fact that I am a 7-foot tall ceramic armor bone plated Spartan, that is what I, that is, you know, has a look and has a magic lady that talks in my head. You know, that is what I'm taking on faith. That is kind of, that's my force in Halo. You know, there's so many things that we've learned, we've grown with, you know, we have intergalactic zombies attacking us. Okay, you know, but that's, it was a science experiment gone wrong. You know, that makes sense. You know, you can kind of piece it all together. Why take it to such an extreme? You know, such an extreme of introducing these people, these, you know, the Forerunners and the Prometheans and the Precursors, which were obviously never, ever intended within the bounds of the story. And I think maybe that's where I'm getting it, is that we kind of know the scope of the Halo story. This is two galaxies to the right of it.
Well, they're expanding it, which is, I mean, there's a point where you start to learn everything about it and, okay, I want some more stuff. I want some new stuff. I mean, after 10, 11 years of like not ever seeing a Forerunner, not ever seeing any, you know, real consequences as a result of what they, of anything they did or do, I'm really glad that we're actually starting to see that now. It's like, okay, cool. We're finally getting some answers. Well, at the same time, they're still introducing these new crazy complex mysteries. And I'm cool with that. I like it. The real quick,
they don't make sense within the lore though. They I mean, they've actually gone back and redacted books. I mean, you're not working within the universe. You've basically broken the universe in half to form it.
You're saying Bungie never did the same thing with Halo Reach? Halo Reach.
I don't count Reach. Oh, that is not.
I don't count Reach.
As you
said,
I've always had Halo 1, 2, and 3. Those are. I mean, I have problems with Reach. But yeah. That's not what we're here for. But I mean, that's the thing, is that it's been molded to the will as opposed to the original story. That's where I'm getting tripped up.
We got a little bit far from it, but I can go back and help you on the Hardlight thing with the Hardlight bomb shelter. With Cortana just figuring that out. You know, every Forerunner structure is made out of Hardlight. Like, their buildings.
Yes.
Yeah. Who's to say Cortana didn't figure out how to do that and just make... I mean, if they can make entire buildings out of Hardlight, like, just whatever the hell they want, that Didact spaceship made out of Hardlight. Why can't she make a bomb shelter out of Hardlight? And I mean, just in it.
Yeah, but a bomb shelter that goes around his hands that are on the bomb as it goes off.
Who knows, man? Who knows? Like, one of the things you mentioned, there's always like this one grain of thing that you just have to take on faith. The fact that Chief's a 7-foot tall super soldier, that's not necessarily my grain of faith. My grain of faith is the fact is that the Forerunners have such a high level of technological expertise that they can do whatever the hell they want. And that is what we take on faith. And that Cortana is so smart that she's learning how to do that. That's what I always take on faith. It's like,
For me, it's not a matter of like, you know, you can have faith in certain things humanity can do. Like, oh, you know, someone invented something that, you know, some crazy thing like that. Like Prince is more of the older stories. But as soon as you expand the universe to the point of a crazy race that, you know, like essentially created humanity, and you get into all the really complex stuff that we couldn't even like wrap our minds around now, there's a lot more faith to be put on it. And that's like, to me, that's something I enjoy better. Like, I enjoy, like you just said, like just going, you know what? Okay, you know, that happened. And I would potentially, you know, like so much be explained now or in the future games. However, as it stands, you know, it's Forerunner. I don't get them as it is, right? I'll let it just happen.
My thing with Cortana and the Hard Light is that at no point ever in the past 11 years has it ever been indicated or hinted at that she was capable of doing that. And I understand why they did it. Or not why they did. I understand that what she did works within the universe that she lives in, but it doesn't make sense why they had her do that. How hard would it be to have Chief come to a hard light bridge that's like flickering in and out and he can't get across it? And Cortana's like, hey, plug me in. And so she goes across the hard light flickering. And so you can start to think, oh, wow, maybe she can control hard light.
Well, she might not have learned how to do that yet.
I assume she learned it, yeah, when she was on Requiem.
Wasn't there something...
But there's no indication of it. It's just, it's magic. That's what it comes down to for her, is all of a sudden she's magically able to do this thing that she hasn't been able to do for 11 years. And there's absolutely no indication in the game at all that this is possible.
Well, she doesn't need to tell you everything she learns. Like, it's not like, I mean, if Cortana stopped in mid game to tell me, "Hey, Chief, I just learned how to make things out of hard light. Look what I made. I made a new plate." So then we'd be like, that would drive me nuts. I'd be like, Cortana, there are enemies shooting at
her. And empty her own goddamn bridge. I'm tired of pushing the damn button.
look at the cutscene, though. Look at that one cutscene where she, on a, as a composer, where she's standing in front just explaining the way she knows it's the sun and stuff, and just explaining that. And it's just showing that she's, you know, she's thinking herself to death. So if she's thinking herself to death on this crazy new form of structure with all these new AI interactions and stuff, could she not, within that time where she's just, like, self-combusting, learn how to make a little hard light shield?
I'm not saying that she can't learn it. I'm just saying we were never given any indication that she did. I should have to go back and justify and go, oh, well, I guess she learned how to do this before. That should be something that's given to me. And that's a problem with Halo 4 entirely, is there's at least a huge game worth of information that's just left out, and you just have to go back and read the Wikipedia article, go back and make up excuses for it, as opposed to it being just given to you. The perfect example is the Elites, fighting in the beginning. I have a friend, he's played every single game, from start to finish, he's played it multiple times, but he doesn't read the fiction and he doesn't go to Waypoint. He purely plays the games. When he finished, he wrote me and was like, I don't know what the fuck is going on. Why the hell are we fighting elites? This doesn't make any sense. And yeah, Cortana says in the beginning, a lot can change in 4 years. Well, that's pretty fucking vague. You know, if she wanted to say something, it could have been something as simple as, you know, well, not all the elites like the Arbiter, or not all elites like X. But the point is, they didn't give it to you. You have to go outside the game to understand what's going on. And I think that's a major problem with Halo 4.
They want you to spend the money on those books.
The book to understand the game. Like, I shouldn't have to do that. Think about Skyrim. Skyrim is a fantastic game, but it's insanely complex. If you've been playing since the first Elder Scrolls game, you're going to find little stuff in there that are gems that go back for decades. But for me, just playing Skyrim myself, I completely missed it, but I still enjoyed the game. I still got the story. It's not like that in Halo 4. You have to know what's going on. If I hadn't read Glasslands, I would have no idea why we were fighting Elite in the beginning. It's not explained. There's so much that's just not given to you in the game. You might be able to find it other places, like in the books or online, but you shouldn't have to go outside the game to understand it.
I'll give you that. That's absolutely one of my irks with the game. You know, even I don't even have nearly as much knowledge, as I'll say, as you guys here. You're definitely like Halo lore masters. But even going into Halo 4 myself, there was parts that I'm like, okay, I know this from, you know, like you said, like from, you know, having discussions in the past or reading the books or whatever. But yeah, like for any average player, like even myself, I found myself lost a few times. I'm like, I had to just constantly remember facts and just tie them together without having them just kind of fed to me.
Yeah, I mean, the fact that I've read all the books, I've played all the games, I am obviously very versed in the Halo universe. Even I was at a point going, what the hell am I doing here? What's going on? I don't understand. And if someone like me is lost, if anyone one of us is lost, there's a disconnect here. There's a lot of information that's just missing. And that's what I'm getting at with the Cortana and Hard Light thing, is I'm not saying she couldn't have learned it. But it just seemed like magic that in the moment of most need, she magically has this new ability that we've never seen before and has never been hinted at. Maybe she learned it, but we weren't given that information. So you kind of have to go back and justify it to yourself. And I don't think you should have to do that.
At the very least, and this isn't necessarily a good thing to say, but, you know, the fans, for the most part, it does give some, like, fan service, right? Bringing in all these old things, like tying in all the books, getting all the whole universe together in this game. If you know your stuff, Halo 4 will be a super big treat. But, you know, coming in as a first Halo game, it might get a little complicated.
And that's the problem, though, is that you want the game to be accessible to everybody. Yeah. You want everybody to enjoy it and to understand. And again, like my Skyrim reference, if Skyrim's your first Elder Scrolls game, you're still going to enjoy it. But if you've been there and you've been through others, like my husband, Cal, he's been with it since the very first Elder Scrolls game. And I'll be walking down the line and we'll pass a beggar and he'll go, oh, that beggar's from this game. And he did this, this, and this, and it ties in with all this lore. So the baseline should be the lowest common denominator. The game should be able to be played by a person who's picked it up for the very first time. Now, there should be treats in there for the faithful. You know, I have no problem with having something that's in there. So, oh, you read Glasslands, you're going to, you know, this is an extra treat for you. But it shouldn't be the other way around where you have to be a master of the literature to be able to fully understand the story.
Well, I don't want anybody to have to be a master of the literature for it, but if this is your first Halo game, like, to anybody, if you're picking up a game that says 4 in the title and are confused by things that happen, I really don't have any sympathy.
But that's Rachel and I were confused by what's happened, and we're not into it at all.
You weren't confused by the entire game. Like, you weren't picking up and like, what the hell is this alien? What are
I would go through a few levels and then go, oh, okay. Like, now it just clicks.
Yeah, and sometimes it takes a couple moments of clicking. I mean, yeah, that kind of stuff happens. 343, they probably should have done a little bit better of a job explaining a few different things. There's this moment where Chief finds out that there were ancient humans at one point. That probably should have been like a shit your pants moment.
Yeah.
And now
When
Librarian tells him everything. Yeah. It could very well be that in between they may have found out in Halo 3 in the terminal, blah 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 blah. There are areas where you can write it away, and that is one of Goose's points, is that you shouldn't have to do stuff like that to write it away. Yeah. So yeah, there are a few moments. I mean, I know that if somebody told me, "Hey, Brian, there were ancient humans 100,000 years ago," I'd be like, "Oh, okay. Wait, what the what?" And I wouldn't just accept it, you know. I'd be like, okay, let's talk more about this ancient human stuff.
And they were all male. Fuck you, Greg Bear. They're all male.
No, there was a female one.
No. Yeah, there's a female. There's Venevra. Venevra was her name.
And there was the one that Riser got was female. The guys that Riser got was female.
In those books are male. The two humans, the Didact, and Bornseller. They're all male. The ones that matter are all male. I'm just saying. I'm throwing it out there.
I mean, Goose, there are more people to yell at, like more important people to yell at than Greg Bear for this situation necessarily. I mean, let's start by yelling at, like, say, I don't know, American voters or something. I mean, we don't have any, like, you know, American voters.
Like, start with some, write that. He wrote that himself.
Let's start with some more important things, first of all. It's like, damn it, Greg Bear, why aren't there any girls in this? Like, why aren't there any, like, you know, women could only vote, like, less than 100 years ago, right? Like, I mean, let's start with the more important stuff here. I mean, I really didn't care that there weren't, I mean, it was one of those things where it's like, okay, cool. I mean, there's.
Did we just equate a novel to women's suffrage?
I have no idea what just happened.
I think we just did that. I think we just equated a lack of female characters in a science fiction / fantasy novel to the women's suffrage movement. I just want to make sure that we're clear on that.
The point that I'm trying to make is that I don't think that it was necessarily such a big deal that the two main human characters in the Forerunner books were male. Not too big of a deal, considering that, like, I mean, we could argue that, like, Librarian is probably a bigger main character as a whole, right?
Oh my god. We are not, like, getting into this fight. It's not a fight. Librarian, you never see her. You almost never hear of her. She is quiet, like a woman should be, in the background, being talked about, but not speaking herself. That is what the Librarian does.
She is in charge of everything. She's so much, like,
She is seen and she is not heard. That is exactly okay. But no, I mean that's the point. She takes care. She's the nurturer. She takes care of everybody. She creates the arc. She fosters the humans. She is the character. She's freaking Jane Goodall, according to that series. And that's great. And I'm glad that she's there. But that
she's also secretly in control of just about everything that's going on.
But how much do you hear from her? How much do you see her? How much do you actually get to be part of her? Think about Glasslands. How many female characters were in Glasslands? And they interacted, and they talked about things that weren't boys. Glasslands passes the Bechdel test fantastically, and it's wonderful. And again, I have a very biased perspective here that I'm like, holy shit, there is more than one woman in this book. Holy crap, it exists. Well, and that's all I'm saying is that Primordium and Cryptum and them, they're very male-centric. Very, very male-centric. And I guess I'll leave it there. Okay. Maybe. Because right. I really want to get to Cortana, and I have to go pretty soon.
Before we get to Cortana, one point I really wanted to raise quickly, which Minolta actually talked about when we were doing a campaign playthrough. And he was noticing, and I totally agree now that I've played the campaign again, was that why the hell weren't the guys of the Infinity more surprised at finding Master Chief? And vice versa. That yeah. Master Chief's the Infinity so quick. There was never holy crap, why is the Infinity here already? It's more like, oh, it's inside the planet. Let's go get it. It's like, what? You didn't stop for a second to be like, wait, why is that here? And like, why is Master Chief? There should have been more surprise from both sides. Should have been like, there's no way. Everyone thought you were dead. he thought he was totally out of the way from anybody. So for them to clash and both of them not to be surprised was kind of odd.
Well, I mean, at the end of Halo 3, we saw Cortana says she's going to put out the beacon, but she said it would be a while before anyone finds them. So it seemed to them that she was pretty confident that rescue would come eventually.
Even so, though, it's just, you know, they got prematurely awoken, right? And, like, it's just a lack of questioning. It's inside the planet. Let's go get it.
That's okay. Halo 4's big thing. That really is Halo 4's big thing, where it's like, okay, we're just not going to – we don't care. It's like, okay, these things are coming in front of us. And maybe it's just because Master Chief just has so much more discipline than the rest of us. But it's things like there were ancient humans. There's this giant Forerunner planet that's wrapped in metal. It's like, what the hell? What? I mean, any normal person would have, like, been like, what? What's going on?
We've already seen these kind of planets before, though, so it's not something that's a new experience to humanity in general.
You know what? I think that's still a big enough experience that even on your second time seeing, it's not like, you see one Forerunner planet, you see them all, am I right? You know, I think it's still one of those things.
It takes on a Promethean night. It's like, oh, yep, just another day in the neighborhood. Like
this is Act One, though. I think at the end of the day, of every discussion we have, right, we need to reserve at least a little bit of our judgment until we see how the whole arc of the story works, right? Because we're changing up things. We're going into this full Forerunner stuff. They really wanted to cram as much information down our throats as they could. Just like, here, here, here. Like, this is all the new stuff. Get acquainted with the universe. Understand what's going on. And now we can lead into Halo 5, which I think will be a lot more interesting.
But even to that, though, the jamming of information, there still wasn't enough information in key areas where it should have been.
Because they spent so much time putting forth their new agenda as opposed to actually reconciling all the huge differences. I mean, in Halo, was it Halo 3? I mean, the big thing was the alliance between the Covenant and the humans. Like, that was the most important relationship in that game.
Well, it wasn't the Covenant. It was a certain sect of it.
That is how they defeated, you know, the big bad. That's how they came together, and that's what was important.
Well, it was primarily elites too, and it's also a strange thing because humans and well, this is according to the Greg Bear stuff. So I know this is, yeah.
Humans, amazing.
And Sangheili used to work together before.
God, it hurts. It burns. It burns. It burns.
Sorry, Goose. Had to put it out there.
That's the thing, though, is that it's. You know, it's important, and I felt like Halo 4 was a scrubbing of the last three Halo games, Halo 1, 2, and 3. I just kind of scrubbed them clean. It was like, that really didn't happen.
I think there needs to be some reconciliation between those games and what happened in Halo 4. There needs to be some kind of conjunction in between that ties it all together in Halo 5 and 6.
See, what I thought should have happened is that, okay, don't get me wrong, I loved Forward Unto Dawn. I thought it was fantastic. I thought it was wonderful, well done, loved the Hunter fight. Thought it was awesome, but I think it could have been used so much better to tie Halo 3 to Halo 4 if it had focused on that time period instead of Lasky's puking. I think people might have been better prepared for what they were going to find in 3, and it's a lot easier to intake, you know, a YouTube video than to read the books and to go through the Wikipedia pages and HBO and, you know, all that stuff. So again, I love Forward Unto Dawn. Loved it, loved it, loved it. Loved the Griffball Court, episode 1. Totally, totally there. But I think it could have been better served bridging this massive gap between Halo 3 and Halo 4.
Well, I think, you know what? I think at that point it's a matter of kind of crossing over fiction that you've already put out there. And they're already looking at the Karen Travis novels. Granted, I haven't read them, so I don't know specifically where it is. But they've already explored kind of that intermediate between Halo 3 and Halo 4 in book form already.
How many people watched read Glasslands versus how many people bought Halo 4? I would imagine there's a massive.
I mean, so you could say that for
of
the books
for Forward Unto Dawn. Well, that was something I want to get on is, you know, you say Forward Unto Dawn didn't really do a good enough job bridging some stuff. The odds of somebody who's going to watch Forward Unto Dawn, it's a fan. You know, like a Call of Duty player who only exclusively plays Call of Duty and wants to try Halo 4 for the first time is probably not going to watch Halo 4 Forward Unto Dawn. He's not going to care.
Well, right? How it was promoted with Machinima and everything, I think we're going to see a little bit more of the casual game player kind of really be interested in that kind of thing.
The bottom line is that a YouTube video is easier to watch, is easier to intake than a book. And that's all I'm getting across there is that watching a video is something that lazy people like me do rather than read a book. It's shorter, it's less time, it's more action. I think it's just an easier way to consume the knowledge. That's
I don't know. It's actually a significantly shorter amount of time if you were – obviously not now that all five episodes are out, but it is a much shorter amount of time to sit down and read the damn book than wait 5 weeks for each 15-minute episode.
Or you can just wait for them to come out all at once and watch them in one sitting.
Not really, because when you watch something like that too, you have the ability to multitask.
I don't want to multitask when I'm watching a movie. Get out of here.
I mean, I don't either, but I'm just saying you can watch it and be doing other things at the same time.
I think we can all agree though that there was definitely information lacking from the game that could have really easily been put in. Like, for example, you know, instead of saying Cortana saying, well, a lot can change in 4 years, saying something like, well, not all of the elites agree with the Arbiter. I mean, just I feel like that one line would have done so much. It would have done worlds for people new to the game, like my friend who plays the games but doesn't do any of the expanded universe stuff. You know, just that one simple line would have explained everything. It would explain why we're fighting the elites, just like that. Or, you know,
are we going to see like a Mass Effect style intervention here?
Well, I mean,
I don't know.
Oh, Mass Effect's amazing. You should try it. You know what, though? One of the things that they didn't mention in the game at all is that this is not the main covenant. And these guys have a name. They are called the Storm. Why are we didn't even get that mentioned once. And I think that's what
Goose is getting at, though, is there's the references and there's more information. And I'm just hoping that with Halo 5, they'll kind of fix what they broke and kind of bring it all back together again. And I mean,
I don't want to say they broke anything, but
so it's a matter of opinion at that point, because I kind of side on both sides here, because I mean, I'm a big Halo lore person, so I've read the books. I like what they did with Halo 4, and I understand most all of it. But then again, there is the side to where you have the casual players that are coming in and just really there to consume what's based on the games. They're purely
be a casual player.
Well, you know what? I've got
purely
something
a casual
else.
Player. Yeah,
I've got something
I'm a
else for you then.
Player?
No. I'm talking about just more of the general audience that just played games casually. They're going to be focusing on just the games. They're not going to be interested in the books, and you have to be able to portray that extra information within the game so they understand what's going on. And
I think what Green Skull and I got at earlier was that we're not just casual players. We're consumers of the Halo lore and the Halo fiction, and we still got lost. I wouldn't consider Green Skull and myself to be casual players as far as the knowledge goes.
I'm not trying to say it that way. I'm just saying the more casual players are going to be even more lost and confused, and they even need a little bit more help.
Well, actually, here I've got something for you. So we're saying this like Halo 4's story is already over. We still have another 5 odd weeks of Spartan Ops content, and I believe 343 even said that that Master Chief is going to make an appearance in Spartan Ops. Who's to
they
say
did?
That? Yeah, I heard that from somewhere. Yeah. That it connects their stories. I mean, I consider
well, the
Spartan
story's
Ops
already
to be
connected.
Part, yeah, well, I consider Spartan Ops to be a part of the package of Halo 4. Not all the story is entirely done yet. One of the questions I had when I beat Halo 4 was, okay, why did we never see Jule Imdama? He was never in the game.
Okay,
let
me throw this at you then. For everyone who buys the game who doesn't have live, that just play it for the campaign, they don't get to play Spartan Ops.
I was just about to make the same kind of comment.
Yeah, they're a little bit SOL on that.
But people do that. I know there are quite a few friends on my friends list who do it that way. They play just Halo 4 for the campaign and do not do anything online multiplayer.
I think it's getting to the point, though, where it's one of those things where by now you are kind of expected to have Xbox Live if you want to take part in all Xbox Live activities.
But that shouldn't restrict your experience if you want to convey the story for a title such as Halo.
I think if Spartan Ops was something that wasn't necessarily tying into the campaign, yeah, I can see it. It's an online experience. That's fine. You have to have Xbox Live. But if it's containing parts of the campaign, if it's containing... I mean, if it is, like you're saying, an extension of the campaign, I think the person who paid for the game to play campaign should have that content without having – they paid their $60. They should get the campaign.
I'm not saying it's a 100% extension of the campaign. I'm saying it's just that there are tiny little details and tidbits where it's like – I mean, I've gotten a couple minor things explained from Spartan Ops. I mean, the biggest thing was, where the hell is Jule Imdama? That was a big deal. He was a big guy. Why isn't he showing up? And then we see him there. I believe we saw him in the first terminal. I always write out the first terminal for some reason because they released that –
Yeah, before the game came
out. For some reason, I never bothered to think about that one. But yeah, we saw him in there. And there's a lot of questions about the story that are explained in the terminals, which I guess, again, are Xbox Live reliant. I think it's just one of those things where it was probably Microsoft had them and said, hey, cut out some of this. I don't want to even want to say that this is 343's fault. I want to say that this is Microsoft saying, hey, make some of this content Xbox Live required so we can sell a few more gold subscriptions. Yeah, at this point, it is just there's some stuff that is just you are expected to have Xbox Live. I mean, regardless if somebody who buys the game doesn't have Xbox Live, they are still they're still wasting money on a product that is they're still spending $60 for what becomes a lesser package. And
it's just an expectation at this point, right? Like it's, you know, if you're going to go for it, you know, pretty much everyone, no one should be catered to at this point, you know, who doesn't have Xbox Live. And I find that's just how the industry is going. Right.
Mm-hmm. And it's one of those things where it's like, okay, it's 2012. Just about everybody's got internet access. It's not an impossible thing to come by nowadays. I mean, you know, it's not like Halo 2 days where barely anybody had access to this. You know, I mean, this is okay. It's kind of expected now. And I can see how some consumers would be upset by that. As a longtime Xbox Live member, I'm like, it's about damn time I'm getting some more content. But I mean, I can see how some people would be angry by that, but it's one of those things where it doesn't affect me. Okay, moving on. But at the same, I can see how, yeah, there are a couple details that would have been nice if they'd included it in for non-Xbox Live members. But yeah.
I'm just saying, if you want to keep an audience to really enjoy your campaign story and really dive into the fiction of the universe, then you want the whatever additional stuff that you add on to support that as well.
And even though the nuanced details of Halo 4 are incredibly reliant upon the books, as for the main story, nothing in the main story was, if you did not read this book, then you are screwed. There are minor details that you will be
confused. I don't know. There's some pretty major things in there.
Yeah. It still explains very well enough that you have a villain. His name is Didact. He's a forerunner. He's very angry. Doesn't necessarily get into it, but you can tell he just on the outer surface, he is just a supremacist who doesn't like humans. There's obviously a deeper level to it that they explain further in the terminals and the books. An important detail, or I don't even want to call it an important detail, but a big part of who Didact is he's not a bad guy. He's not this crazy, evil, angry villain. He's pissed at humans, you know? They killed his kids. I talk to a World War II veteran. I'd be surprised if any of them still like Germany. You know, they're probably, I mean, I, my grandfather up until the day he died, was like, oh, those damn Germans, you know, every day, right? And Didact's kind of one of those guys. He's just those damn humans, you know? And
yeah, but that's not very well portrayed in the game only.
Yeah, can we talk about Cortana now? I've waited.
Yeah, we should probably... Yeah, well, final remarks on this, and we'll move on.
Just the final remarks are that I like Halo 4 story. It's a good game. There were definitely a lot of details in there that, as a avid Halo lore guy, I knew. Okay, there were a couple other questions that I had to dig into a little bit further. There were a few other things where there's actually some interesting dialogue pieces that you can find in the game if you go searching. There's some Easter eggs and stuff that do kind of help with some stuff. There's one in particular, which is a Covenant terminal that you can find in the second level that explains why the Covenant are at Requiem when you get there. So there's other Easter eggs, right? Stuff that you do have to search for a little bit. But as a whole, I really, really enjoyed it. It was a good game. Probably my second favorite Halo. I thought 343 did a really excellent job considering the task that they had at hand. And it was good.
I mean, reading the books definitely helped, and it made the game just that much more kind of an awe factor for me. But I kind of looking at that argument, yeah, for people that just play the games, they're probably a little lost at this point.
I don't want to say that they're 100% lost. I think that there is still a narrative that still makes sense, even if you don't understand the details. Master Chief got woken up. He's on a mysterious planet. There are new aliens there, the Prometheans. There's a new bad guy. He's a forerunner. And there's another forerunner that likes humanity, you know, the librarian, and he has a big magic space weapon and he wants to kill everybody with it. I mean, the core idea of it is still presented to the player. It is still accessible. But for the hardcore guys who want to learn more, they do have options and they do have avenues to take on that. May not be the best presentation of the way you can do that story. I guarantee you any one of us here if we were in charge of the Halo 4 script, we would have said, hey, add in this line of dialogue. Hey, add in this line of dialogue. It's a lot easier to say all that, you know, post-game launch and say, hey, why didn't they do this? They were still building this entire universe while building the game at the same time, or this post-Halo 3 trilogy universe. But, I mean, overall, though, the game is still accessible enough to new players without getting into the nitty-gritty details. And some people say the nitty-gritty details are 100%, you know, required. And it's one of those things where, all right, it's enough to get them going for now. So.
All right, we'll save this discussion for later. But to Cortana in the final scene. So there's at least it drove me up a wall just with how much you could pull from the last cutscene with Cortana and Chief in the hard light barrier. So first things that we kind of brought up earlier is Cortana magically finally understands how to use hard light. And was there something in Halo Legends to the effect where we saw Cortana like reach out to Chief and wipe mist off of the
Okay, nothing in Halo Legends can be 100% considered canon. Events did not happen, but I think that was just artistic interpretation. It did happen, but anime can get a little bit weird at times, and I think that was just one of those weird anime moments, if you know what I mean.
Right. I know it's not supposed to be canon, but...
Well, I mean, it's possible that it is. I'm just saying that, like, just some of the nuances of it, like, some of the details like that, that's artistic interpretation.
Well, even during the Ford Unto Dawn stuff, we saw, like, Cortana try to reach out and choke Chief to death.
I mean, yeah, biggest issue with Cortana was the way she... I mean, I obviously have an issue with the hard light shield. I have the magical saving of Chief. I'm not a big fan. My biggest issue, though, I can even put those aside. My biggest issue is how she was portrayed. She became this weepy, weak, sad. Oh, it made me so angry because in Halo 3, she was a damsel in distress. And I was hoping maybe in Halo 4, she wouldn't be. But, I mean... exactly what's happening is Chief is trying to rescue her. She's a damsel. She's sad. She's crying. She's upset all the time. And
I wouldn't say she's a damsel in distress.
Master Chief is trying to rescue her. What do you
know? Well, they did a big thing with where Chief is the one who's trying to calm her down. In very particular is that sequence where there's a couple of them where he's like, Cortana, it's not over. Not yet. You know, that the one where he has to tell her to stop, focus. Think about Dr. Tilson. Find me Tilson. Yeah, I mean, she was definitely going crazy. As for the, you know, the weepy lady, you know, weepy little girl stuff, I was like, all right, whatever. As a man, it kind of like deepens because they're going to expect that a majority of their audience are men, right? So don't do that. Don't do this. Just it's one of those things where especially considering the character Master Chief as a man, it's just one of those things where it's just like, okay, as a guy, I felt, I gotta help this girl. But it's, oh God, this is coming across bad, isn't it?
Take it slow. Just take this slow.
But I mean, there was clearly something horribly, horribly wrong going inside of her mind that nobody, I mean, we can't understand. I mean, imagine having a million of you screaming inside your brain at once.
All I've got to say, I've got to say one, I'm a clinical psychologist in training. I work with schizophrenics and I literally work with people who are losing their mind. I can promise you they do not become weepy messes. Two, Guilty Spark. He went rampant. Was he weepy and crying? No. He was this evil mastermind who was full of anger and rage and trying to destroy the universe. And in Forward Unto Dawn, the splitting of Cortana was much better. You can see her arguing with yourself, hating Chief, loving Chief, having this huge internal struggle. And I was like, yes, yes, bring that into the game. But no, they didn't bring it into the game. She got angry once. And it was like, oh my goodness, I'm sorry. You know, and
I wouldn't say once. I mean, there were quite a few times where she would, she would go to, like, for instance, when she called, was it Tilton? I think she called, who'd she call? She called, like, the first time they played chess or whatever. She was a bitch or whatever, right? And she got pretty angry. And
do your job, I'll do mine, quip she made. I mean, she got angry a handful of times.
Just peppered in there. If she's going rampant, I want to see rampancy. Not this, but predominantly, even though she did get angry sometimes, predominantly she was this very weepy, sad figure. And for me, that's incredibly enraging because I remember Cortana in Halo 2, and that is what I will always think of Cortana as. Smart, strong, brilliant. And I will never, ever think of her as this weak, weepy damsel in distress that needs saving. Now, in the end, she did save Chief, which, okay, I can kind of deal with. And I know she's not gone. Obviously, she's in the foreigner technology. She's in the composer.
Yeah, we'll talk about that here in a little bit.
She's going to come back. But that's another reason why I was so upset that she, quote unquote, died, is because her death is going to have no meaning because she's just going to come back. So I'm sorry, if you're going to kill off a huge character like that, there needs to be some meaning in the loss, and there is no meaning because she's not actually gone. And so you first, it's just frustrating to have.
Well, hang on. I would say the majority of people playing thought she is. The amount of comments I've seen all over the internet that are 100% certain Cortana is flat out dead, it's heavily outweighs our pretty much like we know that she's going to come back. But the majority of people playing don't.
Then I feel bad for them because they're going to go into Halo 5 and go, oh, well, I guess she's not gone. You know, they brought her back from the dead. They pulled an alien.
But even just playing the game.
So happy.
Well, I think I've got a pretty good explanation for what happened to her is, and I don't think she's dead at all. This is a big, big book detail, and this is 100% my speculation, but if you'll remember the Forerunner domain, which is to overly simplify is the Forerunner equivalent of the internet. It is very well possible that Cortana being is. Yeah, I mean, it is the. This yeah, is 100% oversimplifying it. Okay, but I mean, it is obviously something way, way, way more complex. But it is very well possible that on Requiem, she found a way to reopen it and has integrated, or on Didact's ship and has found a way to integrate herself with it.
That's exactly where I see it.
I think it's more of she's buried in some like crystalline memory unit in the rumble of the Didact ship. I don't think I'm hesitant to branch out and say the domain is involved with this. Granted, it is a possibility, but I think it's more that she's buried somewhere in the smoldering remains of the Didact ship on Earth somewhere.
Well, her data chip was destroyed. Alive,
I mean, we all agree that she's...
Yeah, but her data streams were integrated with the ship at that point.
Well, yeah, that's what I'm saying, is why I think that she's part of the domain, is why I think she was able to access that and reopen it. Because before...
But we don't even know if the Didact ship was in contact with the domain.
Okay, well, I mean, that's what I'm saying, is why I think she was able to open it. Because she may have done that while in Requiem, who knows where she may have done that. And, I mean, first of all,
librarian activated it.
The bigger problem here is how does a damn data chip built by humans somehow work in everything? It works in this Forerunner terminal. It works in this Covenant terminal. It works in
the day.
Yeah, that's a horse shit. Yeah. First of all, bad movie. Second, this terrible, terrible thing.
Well, I mean, Oni has tons of Forerunner technology. If she's this advanced Ancilla, maybe. But again, if she can magically learn how to use hard light, maybe she can magically learn how to store herself in some kind of Forerunner internet. And that's the problem with not actually explaining things or giving precedence for them, is that everything becomes I guess it could happen because, you know, if they can magically make this happen before, what's to stop them from magically making it happen this way?
Well, it gives people...
Because she has been able to integrate with Forerunner systems since Halo 1.
Yeah, but it was that constant damn cutscene that they'd always do with her putting her in the slot. I think Gabe and Tycho from Penny Arcade made a comment about a comic, or one of their little things about it, where it's like a chief shows up at a Radio Shack and he's like, "Yeah, hey, do you have a connector for this Forerunner port? Because I got to put my Cortana data chip in there. Do you have an adapter of some kind?" That was that was silly and stupid, but whatever. I mean, there are worse things to complain about. So.
Yeah, I mean, I do have to say this is the first time that a female Halo character has, quote unquote, died without being shot in the back. So I guess that is an improvement.
Okay, here's the thing, though. Didn't Miranda deserve that? That from war line, come on. I wanted to kill her the second she said that.
The second she said that,
I wanted that building to blow up and I wanted like a big piece of rubble to fall on her head.
It's the fault of the idiot guy who wrote her line.
Oh, no, it was a terrible – no, it was a terrible line. It was terrible delivery. There was everything terrible about it. But in the first instant I heard that, I said, okay, please, 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 please tell me that building blows up and she dies right now. Because I couldn't – that was the worst.
Every female dies by being shot in the back, and I am tired of it. I'm tired of it. All I'm saying is that it needs to stop. please, let's not do that anymore. I mean, seriously, when Cortana did whatever she did in the end of Halo 4, I didn't get to the point where I didn't reach, where I threw my controller down and walked away, but I did put my controller down and go, seriously? So I guess it's better than reach in that respect. But again, I was just like, it didn't, I don't, I heard people saying that they were really touched and some people cried, and I was like, really?
I got a little bit, I got a little bit misting of the eyes.
Oh,
with
I
Halo
did too.
4.
I did too.
That hit me pretty hard. Okay. Because I mean, that is a character that I've liked for going on 11 years now. And that was a big moment. That sucked in a good way. It was one of those things where it was like, oh man, this is somebody I really care about. I mean, frankly, I got a little bit misty-eyed when I thought Chief died in Halo 3.
I wonder if it's because you like Cortana and what's the word I'm looking for? I identify with Cortana. Maybe that's the difference. It's because I also care about Cortana. I've been a huge fan, obviously, of hers for 11 years as well. But when that happened, I mean, it's the same thing when Kat died. When Kat died, I threw my controller down, said this, and walked away.
Well, can we all agree, though? Nobody liked Kat anyway.
See, that's,
I was just kidding. I was just kidding.
Is that when the women die, the men are supposed to feel sad. When the men die, the men are supposed to feel courageous, like they went out and they saved the world. And as a woman, I'm kind of tired of it. You know, I'd like a heroic death, maybe. Can I get a bone? A heroic death, maybe? That'd be cool, right? No one else? Okay.
I can see that. I can see that.
But that's kind of where I'm coming at from, is that as someone who doesn't just care about Cortana, but really sees her as my only real representation in this game. Everybody else is a boy or a blarg face, you know.
Okay, I've got a question for you. Why do you not play Mass Effect then? Like, I mean, I always play as...
I tried Mass Effect 1, and I couldn't...
I love Mass Effect 1, but I understand that. I really do. You can... I'm not condoning skipping a major entry in a series, but you can honestly skip the game if you can't stand it like that and go straight to Mass Effect 2. It does a very good job of explaining what happened in Mass Effect 1, and the combat system is way better. And then, of course, Mass Effect 3 makes it way better. And it's much easier to navigate. Now, I love Mass Effect 1. And I actually had a weird situation with Mass Effect where I didn't like Mass Effect 1 the first time I played it, for the very same reason that 99% of everybody else didn't like it the first time. And I only played like half it, and I was like, all right, I'm sick of dealing with this. I went and played Mass Effect 2, loved it, went back and played Mass Effect 1. If you are looking for that, Mass Effect 2 and 3, and I guess 1, those are your games, Goose. Those are your games.
Is that because I can choose to be female?
You can choose to be female, and your female is a badass. I mean, I always play as Guy Shepard.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
Well, I always play as default Commander Shepard because he's the guy in the cover.
Said male is default, dear God. Default is one of two options. It is one or zero. It is not default.
Because there is a canon for Mass Effect, like, even though your choices do matter in the way you play it, default command, like canonical Commander Shepard is a guy. But I play because I am a guy, and I realize a lot of people play as female Shepard, but you can play as female. It doesn't matter. Female Shepard is probably like the most badass character in video
games. Okay. Off topic. Let's get back on topic.
Sorry, was this a Halo podcast or a Master?
Yeah, this is a Halo podcast.
Anyway, I'm just saying, play it.
Saying is that having a female character for an audience that has a very strong female contingency who is currently being executive produced by and heavily supported by females, I would really like to see some nice, strong female characters that don't get shot in the back. That's all I want.
Okay, now let's not make this as an excuse to kill off Commander Palmer, because I really like her.
I was thinking the same thing.
But seriously, I mean, it's tough, again, because, you know, I think it's interesting that we both care about Cortana, we both really like her, but the reactions were so completely different. And I use Kat as the perfect example, because most of the guys I know, when they talk about Kat's death, they were either happy because they didn't like her, or they were sad because they felt like they let their teammate down.
I just thought it was a stupid death.
Well, that's exactly it. They take the only female and they give her the crappy death. Now, I understand.
I thought that was a stupid thing to do for Halo Reach.
Well, I know.
It wasn't, in my opinion, it wasn't sad or happy. It was just, really?
They're trying to get across that it's war. Anyone can die at any time. No one is immune. Ultimately, we're all dead. I get it. I'm fine with that. But if that's the point you're trying to prove, kill f***ing Emil. Kill the guy who has death on his face. Kill the badass if you're trying to get that point across. Don't take out Kat. Kat should have been the one who goes to the end with you, who's in the frickin' giant gun and gets stabbed in the gut with a sword. That's how she should have died. She should have died an epic death.
Yeah, she was cool. I mean, I didn't like her at all.
But I mean, the thing is, it makes sense. She's with you from the beginning. It makes sense that she would see you through to the end. And I felt disrespected that that's how they treated her. But I know we're off topic here and we're talking about Cortana. But my main thing is the weepy Cortana. I wanted to see the personality split. I really wanted to see the cognitive piece of her. And I feel like we almost predominantly got the emotional piece. The I can't focus. I can't do this. Well, woe is me. As opposed to the more maybe angry,
I mean,
cynical piece.
I'm no expert in psychology, but I would think for someone as strong-willed as Cortana, once you break hard.
But I mean, that's exactly it. I want to see that schism. I want to see those two polar opposites. But it doesn't. But 90% of the time, she's crying and weak and trying to and just being really mopey. And I mean, yeah, there is some comments, you know, oh, that bitch in the chess game, whatever. So there's bits of it there. But when you think about Forward Unto Dawn and how dramatic just that 30 seconds was of her freaking out with herself, that's what I wanted to see more of. I wanted to see that.
Well, we got a really big moment with that, though, when she was trying to imprison the Didact, and then she flipped out halfway through and is like, yeah, I'm not going to do that. Instead, I'm going to sit here and be crazy and freak out.
Ta-da!
Actually, you know what, though? There was a big gameplay moment that they really missed out on there in that particular sequence. You know the part where you jump out of the window and you land on the Lich?
Yeah.
That would have been way more fun as like a gameplay segment, not a cutscene. That was...
Yeah, quick time event something?
No. Let's not do quick time events. Like, I mean, we had enough of those. but just something just like you had a measure of control. I mean, like, have you ever played like Mario where you jump off of a huge cliff and you have some level of control of how you fall? Well, with Master Chief, you could have activated your thruster. It just would have been a much more badass moment if at the last second, bam, you have to press the button but not in a quick timey fashion, you know?
It's kind of like the
scary mean.
Episode 2 where you are like, oh my god, do I really have to jump off this bridge onto a scarab?
That was a badass moment.
That is the best Halo moment for me ever. Is that very first time when I got on the bridge and I was like, really?
Yep.
I'm jumping off a bridge onto this thing? Are you serious?
Yep, and then two scarabs is another one of those really good moments. They had a decent moment where you blow up the Lich and you have to jump out. That was pretty cool. That was all right. There was a lot of physics mess ups with that. I had a situation where I jumped out and instead of the Lich traveling beneath me, like if you jump in a car, you stay still, but the car keeps moving and then you'll eventually hit something, you know? Well, it was one of those things where I was traveling with it and f***ed up and got thrown off there's just a bit of a physics mess up there. But, I mean, yeah, it was a really cool moment. And, I think they could have done, again, I don't want to say quick timey because, I mean, even I like the quick time final boss battle, but I mean, there's a thing as too much quick time, you know, but
right,
I mean,
right.
Do a sequence where, you know, hey, you have some control over the situation. This is a game after all, not a movie.
Yeah. I mean, it's also tough because, I mean, right now I feel like we're really nitpicking. I mean, I did enjoy Halo 4. I mean, there's definitely places for improvement, but overall I thought it was a fun game. I really enjoyed getting to figure out all the new guns, getting to fight all new class of villains. I thought that was a lot of fun. So, I mean, I know I've been pretty harsh so far. I did enjoy the game. But there's just a couple things that really stand out, like the portrayal of Cortana. And to me, it didn't feel like the start of a trilogy. It really felt like an ending. Like, you know, Chief ends up back at Earth, and it seems like that circle has finished. You know, he made it home, and that... So to me, when it ended, I didn't feel excited for a new trilogy. I felt like the quadrilogy, is that even a word? You know, of 1, 2, 3, and 4, I felt like it was an ending almost. I mean, also, yeah. You know, they've been setting up the Didact as a villain. So, you know, he's not dead. You know, he's coming back. You know that Cortana's not dead. She's coming back. And, you know, but it really felt like an ending to me.
Well, you know what? I'd like to talk about Didact more after Spartan Ops is 100% done. Because if that picture that we were talking about that appeared in that Spartan Ops VGA video, if that is what we think that is, then in Halo 4 as a whole just got changed. Like, the ball game has just been changed.
Yeah, it's really because you don't know what else is coming.
Yeah. Were we recording when we were talking about that?
No, I don't think so.
I probably shouldn't have brought that up then.
Well, I mean, we have a recording of it. It's just we started the show afterwards.
Okay.
But
I can link to it later.
Okay. Well, first of all, I really don't even think that Didact's portrayed a little oddly in this game, because everything that the first handful of books did was say that no, he's not the villain. That he's the good guy. And what is, I don't know if you've seen the cover for Silentium or not. What the hell are they doing with that thing? That thing looks terrible. Have you seen the cover for it?
Yeah, I've seen the cover.
Oh my god, that is the first Halo book where I'd be embarrassed to read that in public. You've got Didact looking like this big, evil, angry wizard, and he's got like a crystal ball or something that's, if you look closer, it's the Cryptome, and then he's got Librarian on there who is decked out head to toe trying to compete with Cortana in like attractive fashion. It looks terrible, and it's like, oh my god, I couldn't read that in public if I wanted to.
Yeah, looking at it right now, it looks pretty awful. I mean, he looks like the Witch King from Lord of the Rings.
That looks like a damn Lord of the Rings thing. Yeah, absolutely. It's just something like, I couldn't read that. Ew. But
get it on Kindle.
Yeah, I'm going to have to. I did that with Thursday War. I've got a physical copy of Thursday War, but Amazon does not ship books on day one, apparently, unlike video games. So I didn't want to wait the extra 2 days. So I was like, all right, buy a digital copy and wait for my physical copy.
And don't have a Kindle.
I probably got to go. I'm supposed to go like an hour.
Sorry, Goose.
But I couldn't let it go. I couldn't let it go.
Well, thank you for coming.
All right. Well, thank you for having me and tolerating my views.
Oh, always. It's a pleasure. It's a pleasure to have you on the show.
Your lady listenership is going to go up. So it's going to like double, like two or three now. Yeah.
All right.
I'm going to be really scared if his viewership doubles to three viewers, because his female viewership, excuse me.
Oh, okay.
That mathematically speaking, that does not make sense if only 1.5 ladies are watching this.
I'll go ahead and say I already know that I know 4 ladies listen to this.
We got a badass over here.
You know, right, Green Skull.
You call and you phone him. You let him know that we are totally right. And by we, I mean the entire female species, obviously.
My email is on the website.
There you go. Then it's nice letters, not angry letters. Nice letters.
Well, thank you, Goose, for coming on. We will miss you for the last remainder of the show, which will probably be 30 minutes or so. But thank you.
Well, thanks for having me, guys. And it was nice talking with y'all.
As always, nice to have you on. So one of the things I really want to get to, which we haven't hit yet, which is probably one of the biggest things for me, is whenever you see Chief and Cortana in that hard light room, you don't see anything moving around it. And the questions that come to mind is, one, where is the hard light being emitted from? And two, you don't see anything like quote unquote falling or floating around the box until it starts to disappear. So is this something that's just going on in Chief's mind?
Well, space magic for the emitter. I honestly couldn't give you, I mean, where, because remember, all Forerunner buildings are hard light. What's emitting those? You know, we don't see any physical emitter, right? It's a different kind of hard light for sure, but it's all hard light. Like, you know, like those big spires on Valhalla or Ragnarok, those are hard light. You know, I mean, so everything is hard light, the rocks, the tree, everything. It's weird space magic. So I really,
oh, really?
Don't know what to, yeah. I mean, I don't know how to really quantify that, because I mean, yeah, I mean, every Forerunner they build everything from hard light. I mean, like the big primary examples are, the buildings.
But there has to be some kind of power behind it.
Yeah, exactly.
It can't just like magically exist out of thin air.
Well, I mean, also, I mean, if you want to get into that, light can't have weight either. So, I mean, there's more to this than that. But as for that thing with the rubble, that was probably my favorite scene in the entire game, because it was a metaphor. It was a really deep metaphor for. You notice you only see the rubble start to appear as soon as Cortana disappears. That was a magnificent metaphor for Chief's world is crumbling around him. He has no one left. That Cortana was the last person, I'm air quoting here, person, but the last piece of Chief, the tie to his humanity, what made him a human. And she's gone. And that was just such a brilliant metaphor. It was subtle. It was very nice. It was a cool effect. I can't describe the physical why to you. I have no idea why the rubble just chose to become apparent right then. But it was awesome and very, very, very tastefully well done.
It's one of those things that is making me think, and how exactly does something like that happen if it wasn't just something that was going on in Chief's mind? Because we saw when Cortana was, or the pedestal that Cortana was in got blown up, we still saw remnants of her in Chief's suit, and whether that was just something that was being transmitted and received by the suit, or it might have been...
That was just coming from just whatever control Cortana had through the ship, through the domain, whatever, just broadcasting that to a suit. Because, I mean, if you'll remember, you hear Didek talk to Chief all the time. Now, whether or not that's through telekinesis, whatever space magic he had. Because remember, Didek could use the Force, apparently. So, who knows exactly what was going on with that. But, I mean, I don't want to say there was any remnant of her in a suit. She was just broadcasting through the ship, I would suppose.
Okay.
It's a boring answer, but it's...
Yeah. And the implementation of her being able to use the light bridge and hold the Didek down, it seemed like a cop-out. It seemed like just an excuse to put a little bit more of Chief taking out the Didek in there, because if she was truly in control of that hard light bridge, she could have just made the floor beneath him disappear and have him floor drop.
Could have been something she didn't have necessarily control of until the bomb detonated itself.
This is how we're writing it, shut up and accept it. You know, it could very well been one of those things. I mean, we get that a lot. It's not something I'm not gonna dwell on it too bad. It's just those things. It's just, all right, we'll see where that goes. But I was kind of relieved when that happened. 340, people complain about the QuickTime events in Halo 4. I was actually rather fond of them to an extent. I mean, there's such a thing as too much for sure. Don't do too much. But it was very specifically the scene where you have to press the button. And even though I know there's going to be a Halo 4, or a Halo 5 and a Halo 6, like, you know there's going to be more Halos because it's a new game trilogy, right? It was one of those things where I was kind of scared to press that button. It was like, oh man, dude, am I really going to kill Chief? Is this me? Am I the one who has to do this?
I personally just love how slow he crawled. I'm sure some people maybe haven't had an irk with that or whatever, but I enjoyed it because I knew that was a final moment to the game, and just how long it took him to slowly crawl his way up to that button. I'm like, oh, come on, get there! Like, I was just rooting for him the whole time. I thought that was neat.
Well, I think he just got punched in the throat by a 12, 13 foot tall. All Forerunner warriors, so yeah, I'd be crawling pretty slow too if that was me.
Yeah.
But it was a cool sequence, and I did like it. I would have liked more of those first person sequences, not necessarily quick time events, but we didn't get enough of those in Halo 4, to be honest. The sequence where, like, the elite finds you in the first level and, like, starts growling your face, and you have to punch him in the face. That's cool. I like that a lot. The moments where the Promethean for the first time sees you and he does that skull opening thing. I was kind of hoping that would happen a few more times. That only happened once. I was like, oh man, that could have happened a little bit more.
Yeah, those kind of in your face moments were interesting to see.
Yeah, they were intense, but you get them like the first two or three levels and then you never see them again.
I'm honestly not. I'm one of those people that's not necessarily against a QuickTime event if it's done right. And the QuickTime events that we got were all right. I think they could have. There could have been a little bit more complexity to the punching the elite and throwing him out. Like, you could.
Well, no. That's what made him so good, I thought.
I think it just needed one more button. I think you need one to block and then one to throw him over. I think that would have been perfect.
Maybe, I guess, but, like, I mean, it gets to the point where it's like Star Wars The Force Unleashed, where you're pressing those damn stupid buttons and you miss one button and you got to go back and read that entire QuickTime scene or you die or whatever. Battlefield 3 had a handful of QuickTime events that were just atrocious. I mean, there's a point where QuickTime events need to be quick and subtle. Don't do multi-button presses in my opinion. Like, I was playing Dragon Ball Z Ultimate the other day or today when I was doing it, and there's a bunch of QuickTime events in there where it's like you got to press three or four buttons, and it's one of those things where I'm like, this is too many. Just give me one. Just give me some interaction with the sequence. Make it relevant to what I'm doing. Hitting right bumper RB to melee. Yeah, that's the melee button for me. That is relevant. That is good, just interaction with the player. It works. Okay. Hold left trigger to put in the grenade into Didact. Okay, cool. That works. That's part of my control scheme. But if it was one of those things where it was like, press A, then X, I'm like, well, why? I mean, A is jump and X is my armor ability button. I play bumper jumper. Well, that wouldn't make any sense, right? You know, I mean, that's just not part of the control scheme. That's not part of it. It kind of takes you out of it. So I like what they did. I thought it was subtle enough to where it worked. It did have an unintended side effect, though, of press left trigger to win the game.
Yeah.
Yeah. I guess for the most part, the quick time events were all right. I thought, I guess I'm kind of one of the, I'm against the grain of the crowd here, where it's like I would have liked a little bit more interaction with quick time, but I definitely see where having too many buttons in a quick time event is kind of a turn off.
Yeah, now here's one thing, though, we need to get into, I guess, if QuickTime events and Didact and all that. Why was Didact only in this game, like, for 5 minutes total?
Yeah, I did not like that at all. There was not enough.
There was nowhere. Okay, so I'm going to butcher this guy's last name, but here it goes. The voice actor, I'm not even going to say his last name. I'm just going to call him Keith. That's his name. His first name's Keith. And he is great. He sounds awesome. I've seen him in a couple of things. He's in Mass Effect. He's in Fallout Vegas, he was in Batman, the Heath Ledger Batman. He's a good actor and he's got an awesome voice, right? Why do we only have him for all 5 minutes? Ah, that was annoying. I would love to have seen him more. He's a cool character. They didn't quite do for any just entry player into the game. I mean, all they're going to get out of Didact is he's a cranky space monster who just he just doesn't like humans. Didact is a really deep character, and I really hope that he's not the ancient evil that awakens that they were tagging him as for the longest time. Because, and we're going to find out the last key critical details about Didact and his life are in Silentium, and that doesn't come out until March. So we are actually missing a huge book's worth of information. But based off of the first two Greg Bear books, Didact is a good guy. He is doing something incredibly bad, trying to compose all humans, but for a very good reason. Because if you watch all the terminals, the reason is he needs more soldiers to fight the Flood. And he's turning humans into Prometheans, and that is his reasoning for it. He's run out of Forerunner soldiers to turn into Prometheans, so he's got to go to humans next. And that for him, that's kind of a killing two birds with one stone kind of thing. It's like, hey, I get more soldiers, and I frankly didn't like these guys. Okay, it's a win-win for me, right? I would have liked to have seen a lot more Didact. Nowhere near enough Didact.
I would agree with you on that.
343, yeah. Take a note, more Didact.
Well, we're probably going to see him in Halo 5 and 6 anyways.
You know what, Frank, I just enjoyed listening to him. He had a cool voice, and it was just one of those things where, like, I like this guy. Yeah, it's like Darth Vader, right? You know, they chose a brilliant voice actor for Darth Vader. I like listening to Darth Vader talk. It's a cool villain. Scary bad guy. Same thing, Didact. Scary looking bad guy who's a lot deeper than just that superficial shell that he was given in this game. Man, let's hear some more of him.
Cool. Hopefully we'll see more of him in the rest of the games.
Well, you know what? And here's the big kicker is, are we going to see the other Didact? Because there's more than one Didact. Yeah, and that is a detail that no one knows about unless you read Cryptum and Primordium. That is not even mentioned.
Original Didact dies, but Bornstellar becomes the new Didact.
No.
Yeah, it said in there that he died.
Ready for this? Didact did not die.
It says when and where.
It is heavily implied at the end of Cryptum that he died. He did not die. The dust jacket for the storyline for Silentium. And Greg Bear himself has even come out and said there are two Didacts. So what happened was at the end of Cryptum, we are under the impression that the Master Builder kills Didact, the main Didact. And this is the Didact that we are fighting in Halo 4. The Didact that we see in Halo 4 is the main one, right? He transfers all of his memories to Bornstellar. We assumed that was a process that took over the second the Didact died. Apparently that is a process that can happen while Didact is alive. In the last book, Silentium, we have two Didacts running around at the same time.
Okay.
There you go, right? This is where I think that Silentium is going. Over the course of the events of Silentium,
Didyx has his row with the librarian, which you've seen all the terminals, I presume?
Yes.
Okay, well, for anybody who hasn't watched all the terminals, the point of the terminals in Halo 4 was that the librarian was the one who imprisoned Didex, and librarian is her husband is his wife. You know, they're a husband and wife, and so that adds a deeper level of some weird confusion between her and Bornstellar. But she imprisons Didex for using the composer on her special clutch of humans on a Halo ring, and he's going after the rest of them. Well, I would assume that that is what Silentium is about. And in the meantime, Bornstellar Didact is the one who activates Halo. So now that raises the question, does that kill Bornstellar? Does he die from Halo? Because we know that we've known since Halo 3 that Didact was the one who activated Halo for the very first time. Well, now we know that it was Bornstellar Didact who activated Halo. Now, did he survive that? Did that kill him? At any point in Halo 5 or 6, are we going to have two Didacts running around? How badass would that be? You teamed up with, yeah, dude. If you teamed up with younger Didact to take on older Didact, or vice versa,
that would be interesting.
Just blew your mind. And also, you want to know one of the complaints that I've heard about some Halo from some Halo lore guys is, why does Didact look like a goofy vampire? They kind of explain that in the terminals. You'll remember from Cryptum, you know how Forerunners go under transformations, mutations,
yep,
to try and increase their physical form and stature. Well, Didact, he tried that in an experiment to see if he could mutate himself so far to see if he could become immune to the Flood. It didn't work, and as a result, he looks mangled and ugly and disgusting and hideous, whereas if you see, you know how like he looks a little bit different in the earlier Terminal videos as opposed to the later ones?
Yeah.
I want to say he's a good-looking chap, because he's a goofy-ass guy then, but that's the point. And Cryptum made a pretty big note that how ugly Bornstellar had become after his mutation. Well, that's because of that,
right?
But yeah, I mean, there could very well be a situation in Halo 5 and Halo 6 where we have two Didacts running around. How nuts would that be? That would just
be completely insane.
That would be crazy.
All right. Really cool.
I think we covered just about and everything that I wanted to talk about. I know it's getting late for most of us, so we're going to call it for tonight, and we'll probably come back to talking more about Halo lore as Spartan Ops Episode 1 wraps up, but just kind of wanted to talk about some big things that were out for the campaign of Halo 4 and really just have a good, deep discussion on some of the stuff that we saw throughout the game. And personally, I thought they did a very good job with the campaign as it was. Definitely helps to read the books. If you haven't read them, then you're definitely missing out on some of the key parts of what they're doing with the story now with Master Chief. So if you have a chance to go get the books and read them, I definitely highly suggest it, especially if you're one of those people that's really into the story of Master Chief and humanity as a whole. So definitely go and look at getting those books. I want to thank Goose Checker for coming on. She had to drop out a little bit earlier. Thank you to Brian Newman and Green Skull for coming on as well. You guys were great troopers for coming on and talking Halo 4 for almost 2 hours.
Woo! Yeah, hey, thanks for having me. I want to say, you know what? I might not have come across as great on feminism.
I don't think you did.
I don't think I came across as the bad guy necessarily. That was a fun conversation regardless. It was all right.
Yeah, Goose is a very prominent feminist personality.
I noticed.
Yeah. So I was trying to kind of mediate a little bit there and make sure things didn't explode, but you guys did a good job. And
for the record, girls are pretty awesome. So we they're okay.
I like girls. They're nice.
Green Skull, stop overcompensating.
But
this was thanks for having us.
Yeah, this was great, and we will definitely look to doing this again. And I've finished Primordium, so we'll definitely have another book related podcast coming out. People have actually asked for it in our survey, so. You guys are more than welcome to come on and talk about the books. We were trying to get Grim Brother 1 and Final Postmortem from Forward Unto Dawn, the community, not the series. But they were, I think Jeff is busy, and then Isaac was coming down with something, so he didn't sound too good. But all in all, this was a great discussion, and I appreciate you guys taking the time to come and listen to our banter. If you think that we're wrong in any way, or if you have any comments or any questions about what went on, please feel free to email us. You can send any questions you have or any comments to submissions@podtackler.com. And you can also send us a submission using the big green button on our homepage. And our website is at podtackler.com. Make sure you check us out on Twitter, Facebook, and YouTube. And also participate in our Monday Night Matchmakings, which happens every Monday night at 8:30 p.m. We will not be having one on the 24th, which is Christmas Eve. And you can probably figure out why we're not going to be having one then.
Why? Because it's Hanukkah.
No, another holiday.
Oh, okay.
And I'll be home with my family. So
Kwanzaa.
I will be spending time with my family and taking a break from Halo. But it doesn't mean we're not going to be stopping the podcasting. We are going to come up with some podcasts that we're just going to preload and just prep to start shooting them out over the break while we kind of take some time off. So you'll still get Podtacular over the holidays, so you don't have to worry about that.
It'd be like a best of Podtacular. That's kind of cool.
Actually, it's a podcast that we should have been doing like 2 or 3 weeks ago, but that's beside the point. So thanks again to Goose, Brian, and Dan for coming out. And make sure you check out the Griffball Hub. It's Griffball Hub, not the Griffball Hub. I'll get yelled at from Goose if I say that. They're at griffballhub.com. Make sure you check out Dan over at readyuplive.com and his YouTube channel, youtube.com/readyuplive. And you can find Brian Newman over at many different websites. You can find him over at HBO. Do you gaff a lot?
No, I'm not cool enough to have account. I applied for a gaff account and they said you're not cool enough. So their words.
Same here. Join the club, Ryan. We'll start our own gaff. Bring it on now.
Hey, I'm in the same boat as you guys.
Dan, I'm with you. We'll start our own gaff with blackjack and hookers.
Am I invited?
Forget the blackjack.
Am I invited? Oh, look who's online.
Call our own version of gaff backwards, and then I realized what that was.
Oh my goodness.
The Film Actors Guild already owns that website.
We won't call it that.
Dan, you already have your own website. Okay, shut up. Let's talk about the Brian website here. So you can go to www.brian.com. Don't go there. It's probably not a real thing.
Is it like Bernie.com?
Bernie.com? What is that?
Did you not hear the story that Bernie Burns said on one of the Rooster Teeth podcasts?
And there's 200 of those things. I don't remember.
We'll talk after the show. So thank you guys again for listening. Make sure you check us out every week. We're looking to do the formatted shows pretty soon, probably within the next week. And we will be having our War Games discussion on our next episode. So until then, keep on fragging drucks. And whatever else you find on Requiem.
Man, I completely misunderstood what you said. I could have sworn you said keep off drugs, and then it took me a moment. This is a weird way to end the podcast.